Welcome back. This is hour two of PSYOP Radio this fine Sunday evening with our special guest, Roderick A. McKenzie, talking about his brush with the Kennedy assassination. I'm your host, Smiles Lewis.
And I'm Mac White. And Rod, you were...
I wanted
Smiles has a question.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember if I just imagined this. Did you say in a previous interview that you had briefly had contact with the Secret Service?
No, I made Secret Service ID.
Okay.
I made quite a bit of that. Yeah, and Percy Holt also, he made the badges for that. All the badges out there in L.A., they had a police, I guess it was CIA, they said.
Mm-hmm.
And Maselli, John Maselli and Holt had this badge factory where they had an ID place upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with them a lot.
So yeah. You were there at Baylor Hospital in the cafeteria with John Roselli and your handler.
Jake Miranda.
And during the time that Kennedy was killed, and
we didn't do it.
Yeah, you didn't do it. But the reaction of Roselli was interesting. I thought when you
he could. We've gone an hour and I haven't said a damn thing hardly. I've talked a lot and not got to the crux of the thing. I'm sorry. I'm not a good talker anyway. But. Okay, Roselli left, and I guess it was after the hit, right after it. And Jake Miranda told me he'd see me tomorrow, and which I did see him the next day. And so I'll move along a little bit. I worked that day. 2 days later, I go to Jake's place, and they're closed down for everybody except a few mobsters that used to go in there and eat. And, of course, I rap on the window, and he lets me in. And I go in there, and Mac Wallace is in the sauce real heavy in the back room. It was like a catacomb of rooms in the back where you could, they had gambling, all kinds of things going on back there. And the front was a restaurant, a beautiful restaurant, and he served Mexican food and steaks. And the circus, what they call the circus bar, it was right across from Fair Park over there. And... long story short, Mac is getting boisterous and noisy, and being that's Wallace's. And so he says, "How about getting Wallace out of my hair? Get him out of here." And which I did. I went and sat and drank with him. I suggested we go somewhere else, and Mac was all for it. So we head out and we hit a couple of places on the way to Fort Worth, and Mac's pickup. And we go there, and he's drinking pretty heavy, so I drove the truck. And we get out there to some motel he knew about, and it's a couple of Mexican gals there. And we had some fun there with these girls, and it was, we were just having a wonderful time. And he starts telling me about, I'm supposed to know about the hit that went down. And he starts telling me about everybody, and... I start to, I'm going to write all this down. So I go into the bathroom, and I'm writing whoever he's telling me the names, then where they were on this, during the JFK's hit. It was about 3 days after, maybe two, 3 days after the thing, and they had already told me I was going to go to Parkland Hospital to work. And I was leaving Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all set up. And
another break coming up. We'll be back with a long segment to pick up the rest of the story.
Mistrust the government. Odile.
Welcome back. All right. right, so this is PSYOP Radio, and we're having a discussion with our guest tonight, Roderick A. McKenzie, who's talking to us about his involvement in the Dallas underworld and its connections to the JFK assassination. And we will be opening the phone lines. You can give us a call at area code 512-879-3805. That's 512-879-3805.
Okay, Rod, you were in that motel room.
Here a little bit, huh?
What's that?
I better hurry this up a little bit.
Oh, I think we got plenty of time here. You were in that motel room with Mac Wallace.
And he'd been drinking.
Mac Wallace is telling exactly who did this according to him. Now, this is the part that tickles the palate of all these JFK buffs. And I, you know, I can't say that. True, only that it was told to me by a self-confessed killer, and a man that is a killer by that I knew about. And that, you know, I'm not trying to promote this as being the way it was. It's just what was told to me was a confession by Mac Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going back and forth to the restroom, and there's two Mexican gals that don't speak a word of English that we've been with. Are the only people there. They run this motel, and Mac knew about it. And we're there, and there's nobody to hear it except he and I. And he tells me who the killers were, and he said he ran the teams, and I knew about the sulfur mining company down in Sulfur, Louisiana, and the mercenary camp there, and a language school that they had in that building. And that was CIA run, I understand. But anyway, he said that was the place he trained these people, him and Cliff Carter, the lawyer for Johnson's lawyer. And Cliff Carter was evidently Mac Wallace's boss. And I knew Cliff Carter, too. And they had gone up around Denver there in what they call Red Rocks and done some shooting up there, triangulated fire and so on and so forth. And the only thing I can tell you is, you know, I put all this down on paper, and that's what I put in my book, who they were. I can read it to you if you want.
Yes.
Okay, the command area on the second floor of the Texas State Book Depository was Cliff Carter, Carlos Marcello, which I didn't believe, but I guess that's what he said, Jack Rubenstein and George Reese.
This was the command area. This was the command area. Were they shooters there on the second floor, or just this was where they were?
I don't know. That's all he said was the command area.
Okay.
Okay. In the alley behind the fence and above the grassy knoll, or what they call that, where the fence was, Clyde Faust, who I knew, and John Ernst I knew, and Jack Grimm, I knew all of them. And Joe P. Dugan, who was a partner with me in a lot of burglaries and stuff. And Joe later verified this. So Joe may be dead now. I don't know. He went out on a job that I was supposed to go on with him and stealing gold and with two pawnbrokers from Chicago, and I never heard of him again. I didn't go on the job, obviously. In the alley behind the fence and above the so-called grassy knoll was Clyde Faust, John Ernst, Jack Grimm, Joseph Dugan. Dugan, I don't think anybody's ever mentioned before. Under the bridge, in case the president was not shot, and above the railroad area, and as I said, these people were not used, Charles Harrelson, Percy Chancey Holt, Charles Frederick Rogers, and a man called Dimitri from the ACC who had been in my safe house. On the roof of the county records building, and a lot of people debate this, Harry Weatherford, Roger Craig, both cops, Richard Scaletti, and Michael Victor Mertz, who I also had in my safe house. And on the sixth floor of the Texas Book Depository, called The Nest, Ruth Ann Martinez, who was the hit lady I had on my carnival safe house, Lee Harvey Oswald, and they said he was sort of woozy and that he was like he was drunk or under a spell. He said under a spell.
Under a spell. Wow.
That's Max said.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm Mack Wallace himself. He was there.
Mm-hmm.
Lawrence Leroy Factor. And I know Factor was one hell of a shot. I've shot with him. And the Daltex building team was supposed to be on top, but they didn't make it. It was Eugene Braden. Yeah, he's been mentioned a lot, I suppose. Frank Ferrelli, Sturgis, he said, and Rafael Quintero, who was a stone killer, rotten son of mine. I wasn't a nice guy either, so I can't cast stones. Richard Kane, and Dick Kane told me before they killed him up in Chicago in the 70s, I guess it was, he told me that they had done it, that he'd been where Mack had said. So that's the team.
Now the name Roger Craig is familiar to Kennedy assassination researchers as a Dallas cop who was a witness to certain things that happened after the assassination. He supposedly saw Oswald running out of the school book depository. Is this the same guy, Roger Craig?
Yeah, he was a cop. Harry Weatherford and him were partners in the family.
So Mack Wallace said that Roger Craig was on the county records building. He was part of that team.
Right, on the roof of the county records building.
Hmm.
And he said that Harry Weatherford actually shot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the people, as far as I know. And I believe Mack. I believe him. And I was scared stiff that he was going to realize he had told me this and knock me off. Because, you know, the guy was... He was a killer, and well known for his enforcement and killing. He's a well-educated man, a teacher. You know, he wasn't just some scumbum. He was quite a guy. In his own right, he had a lot of things going for him, but he was wacky.
And he's supposed to have performed another of hits for Lyndon Johnson.
Yeah, he killed somebody over his daughter, and then he killed another guy for Johnson, yeah.
Did Mack Wallace say that he fired on Kennedy?
Yeah, he said no. He said somebody else fired from that spot, and that's where they were in that, where Oswald was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the others that did it. I don't think he actually said who did it.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a... there was him, Ruth Martinez. She could have done the shot herself. She was a hit lady, you know, Ruth Ann Martinez. And she was the lady that was accused later. I saw pictures, and that was Ruth Martinez with the gal with the polka dot dress and the later killing of the other Kennedy.
Yes, that's commonly reported that at the Robert Kennedy assassination, there was a woman in a polka-dotted dress who had been seen with Sirhan Sirhan, and you believe that that was the same individual.
Ruth Martinez, right.
Mm-hmm.
She was a lady that killed with a hat pin in a person's ear while she was making love to them.
Ooh.
Nice girl.
Yikes.
Yeah, she was an expert at that.
Whoa. Did Wallace tell you anything else? What happened to Tippit?
Nobody seems to really know that. I like Tippit. He was a nice guy. I sat and we went shooting together, and I sat and talked with him. We had a few beers together, and he had been with the 17th Airborne.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been with the 508th at that time. He was in before me, but. I knew all about the 17th, so it was, we had common grounds to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a paratrooper. Out of the whole bunch, I think he was the straightest shooter I knew in the so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't very good at shooting when he didn't get Oswald if he was supposed to.
Yeah. Well, it's believed by many that Oswald didn't shoot Tippit, that witnesses say that it looked like someone else who committed that killing.
Well, that kid was set up all around.
Yeah.
He was, I get even scared about that because I think it could, the same type of guy I was, he'd been except he was with ONI and really a trained guy, where I only had the Fields and Flap school. These guys were actually went to all kinds of schools for spying and stuff like that. They went to the farm up in language, Virginia and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody goes to Russia and comes out like that and wasn't somebody, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The guy was, and he was around, he was a fair-haired child with up until his episode in New Orleans with Bannister.
Mm-hmm.
Him and the ferry was always with him. And I mean, I used to see these guys in the Captain Jama quite a bit in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's where I first got to know who Oswald was.
And
I figured he hung around with Dave Ferry. He was a little on the gay side.
Mm-hmm.
Ferry wasn't the noy, fruity guy that they make him out to be.
Mm-hmm.
He was a pretty serious researcher on cancer, and he was at charity hospital a lot. And he was big with Marcello and his people out there.
Mm-hmm.
Jada, he introduced me to Jada the first time I met her. I ended up going with her a little bit.
That's the famed stripper that worked at the Carousel Club.
Confronto was her name.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was quite a nice little gal.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. She and Alice Alexander was the hostess at the Movies Club. I used to go with both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of fun. You can't talk about those things.
Yeah.
So that's my story. I put it out as a catharsis for myself to get it out of my craw. I've been sitting on this for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care one way or the other. If anybody believes it or don't,
mm-hmm.
It's there for them to take. And if they want it, that's fine. If somebody ever wants to write about it, they can come pick my brain a little bit, but I'm not, I don't care one way or the other.
Well, you were
out of my system.
You were concerned.
Right about the carnival and the circus,
yeah.
The crooked games and all that stuff that I really could put out a hell of a book on.
Well, yes, that would be a fascinating story because after Dallas, you went on to a number of other things. But before we get there, you went to that job at Parkland Hospital. After the assassination.
The yeah.
And what were you supposed to do there in Parkland Hospital?
Oh, at Parkland, I was supposed to watch the doctors there. Surgical nurses, male surgical nurses, were in the same room as the same dressing room as the doctors. So I was supposed to be there and report to Miranda every night. For whatever whatever I saw or heard during the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay, because I'm not hearing you very well.
Oh.
So I'd bring back every night whatever information I had, and Miranda would call, I guess it was Roselli or Del Graham, one or the other out in Tarzana, California. And give them whatever I had to report, which wasn't much.
Basically just reporting on the gossip among the doctors there at the hospital.
Yeah, right. That's whatever I heard.
Mm-hmm.
Just keeping my nose to the ground. And the security chief got wind of what I was doing somehow. I don't know. I still don't know how that happened because I was pretty careful.
Mm-hmm.
Kept calling me down, and I just kept working. In those days, they did tubal ligations by mm-hmm. court order. And I was just kept scrubbed in all the time at Parkland. Finally, he come up and got me. He took me down and he says, look, you've been taking notes on the doctors. And I'm going to give you a chance to leave on your own or else we're going to have to can you. It'll be on your record, blah, blah, blah. And I talked to Miranda and we decided it was best I just quit. And then from there, I went... I asked permission and we left and went with the carnival for a little while up to Denver, put my trucks there and stuff, and in the small domes, people at Denver, the mob, we used to use there, the big barn down by the railroad there. Then I went up to Canada and decided to get out of the United States. There was too many people dropping dead, I know. So I went over to France. Well, England first. I worked a trapeze act single trapeze act under the name Roderick, then up to Blackpool, England, over to France, and got on a tour to South Africa. So there's a whole nother story.
Well, that probably saved your life, don't you think, being out of the country?
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. One never knows. As I say, all of this is unverifiable. I used to give my Social Security to wetbacks from all over. I can't say that word anymore. all over the place, and had them, you know, go to work as me some in different places. So you know, it just, I can't verify anything. You either take the story from me or you don't, and I don't care one way or the other.
Well,
I started out with a carnival story and ended up with a this thing got run away on the Kennedy thing.
Well, Mac Wallace, you were concerned that he might remember that he had told you all of these things.
Next day. And evidently he didn't remember much of anything the next day, so that was good. And I wasn't about to remind him.
No.
And, no, he was a lethal son of, you know. And
he sounds like a pretty scary guy.
He was. He was. I knew a lot of people like that. Frank Sturgis was another one. Dave Morales was probably the scariest man I ever met. And he had the nicest guy, an Indian guy. And he did hits for the hell of it. And Roy Factor was another one. Kill you as soon as look at you. And, you know, they were... We all thought we were patriots at that time. And I was a little... Right of Genghis Khan at that time myself. So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't a nice bunch of people.
Yeah.
The guy that goes around doing burglaries and stealing for a living isn't a nice guy either.
Mm-hmm.
But I, like I said, I did a 180 from that later on.
Yeah, how do you view things now from this perspective of 47 years later? What are your politics now?
Well, I think that Kennedy needed killing, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
At least being removed ruined politically one way or the other. What he did to Marcello was unforgivable. Kidnapped the guy and took him down to the swamps in South America and left him. People don't know about that.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know,
we've got a break coming up. Rod, we got a break coming up. Hold that thought, and we'll be right back.
They say he shot the president, but I don't think he did.
Welcome back. This is PSYOP Radio, and you are listening to us live via the American Freedom Radio Network. I'm Smiles Lewis.
And I'm Mac White. Rod, you were about to tell us about Carlos Marcello.
Yeah, I was just saying that what was known to have happened to him with Robert Kennedy kidnapping him, taking him down to South America, I guess it was, in Mexico or somewhere, in the jungle, and just leaving him there, him and his lawyer, that was a pretty rotten thing, and he had to get back by himself, you know, so the guy was pretty mad at him. But one other thing I was thinking of while you were on the break there was Mac Wallace wasn't a very good shot. As I've shot with him, I went over to Marshall with him a couple of times, and we did some shooting, and in fact, Tippett was with us, too. And we did some shooting over there in Marshall, which is, I guess it's east of Dallas.
Yes.
Longview or somewhere like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we did some shooting over there. And he was a lousy shot with a rifle. He was pretty good with a pistol, but the rifle, he wasn't a good shot. So anyway, that's just something I wanted to throw in there. So I don't think he was the one that shot Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Roderick, we have a caller. let's go ahead and take that caller. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, yeah, Rod, this is Ron Patton in Olympia, Washington.
Hey, Ron, how you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
You want to shoot me your ass? I've lost it.
Okay, yeah, I'll email you.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was just wondering if you happen to be able to get anybody to publish your manuscript.
No, I haven't, and I really haven't looked. You know, I throw it up there. They either can or they can't, and it's open for anybody. I'd let somebody pick my brain. You know, I had that guy Jan Greger pick my brain for over a year, and we went to back to Dallas, and I guess we verified a few things, but Jan had done Circus of the Stars, a nice book, and he was all for it, and then all at once something happened, and he didn't want to do it.
Okay, well, my second question is, I was wondering if you'd like to come down to the conspiracy conference with me in Santa Clara next month.
That sounds good, and like I said, I've lost your address and your phone number and everything. Why don't you shoot that to me?
Okay, yeah, I'll email you later on.
Okay.
Okay, nice talking with you.
Okey-dokey.
Thanks a lot, Ron.
Yeah.
Sure.
Rod, you also knew Guy Bannister in New Orleans.
Very well, yeah.
Tell us about him.
Well, you can't consider any of these people friends. I felt that he was using me like everybody else did. And at that time, when I look back of it, I was wondering, like I said, I might have been Lee Oswald. I was wacky enough and, right-wing enough that I could very well have been Lee Oswald of that time. Mm-hmm. Choice for it. Bannister was in and out of Captain John's bar all the time where we got our payoffs. And, in fact, he was the paymaster. And I went to him for him or Delphine Roberts, who was the secretary there, for almost all my needs when I was in Louisiana, sometimes I was in Louisiana. And that was how I knew Bannister. I was in that detective agency quite a bit myself. And, you know, I didn't know anything about the place next door where Oswald used for his address. They were a sneaky bunch. We took weapons to different places. We were in that deal out at Pontchartrain where we were training people and, we had a regular mercenary camp out there. And, a lot of bad characters of that time were running around down there, and I was one of them. I don't like to look back in a minute, but it was. I wouldn't have liked me at that time.
Mr. McKenzie, can you tell us a little more about the time you spent at Fort Detrick with that training? Who was it that recruited you to get taught there?
First name only, man named Abe, and Lewis McWillie, who was the mob. They were the ones that sent me up there. They put me on a boat to Miami, gave me a ticket, naturally no flight, ticket to, on a trailway bus. And I got there and I went in. It was an old chemical building where they'd made nerve gas and who knows what else in that building. And there was 8 of us there that were to be trained, and teachers came from CIA, from the TSS, they call it, Technical Staff Services. And they were the ones that trained us, and everything to do with, from opening letters with, steaming them open to making glues and seals and printers. I had a little press of my own, and that wasn't new to me. Print shop techniques and all sorts of things. I excelled at that. That was really a good week. One girl was among our group. And and we were all worried that we might come down with some unheard of disease because of the building.
Right, yeah. Fort Detrick is known for a lot of biological and chemical research.
Yeah, that's what this place was. They had done nerve gas in it.
And how long were you there?
3 weeks in all. Not quite 3 weeks.
Was it like a 9-to-5 weekday schedule?
No, it was confined. We weren't allowed to go out. We had a little day room. And everybody slept in an open bunk area, like an army barracks at that time. Today they got army barracks so much nicer, but it was just the army cots and a shower for everybody, for all of us, including the girl. And that was, we fixed it so that she had a little privacy, but not much. And I don't know who any of these other people were. Nobody could tell anybody anything. You weren't allowed to.
And so it just, at some point, how did you transition there to your next location?
Oh, they gave me a ticket I had a round-trip ticket on the bus to go back to get the ferry to Cuba.
Okay.
I went back there.
Told
me I was going to Chicago.
Okay. Thank you. Looks like we have another caller. And hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, hi, it's Joan from Providence.
Hi, Joan.
Hey, Joan.
Hi, Rod. It's nice to hear your story in person. Hi.
How are you doing?
How are you, my friend?
What do you want to know?
Something we talked about in the paranoia book was about the IRA, but
Joe
we didn't
Dugan.
Talk too much about Joe Dugan. I'm finding it really interesting that the IRA was involved in the Kennedy assassination.
Well, I don't think they were. I'm not even sure they were, you know. I know Joe Dugan was the IRA, but I don't think, I don't think it was put out by the IRA themselves.
No. And was Joe Dugan on any one of the hit teams?
What?
Was Joe Dugan on one of the hit teams?
He was. What? I was told, by Max Wallace, Joe Dugan was, and Joe himself admitted it later on to me when we were on a couple of jobs. Joe was on one of the killing teams, evidently. Where is, let's see, let me look in here. Joe Dugan in the alley behind the fence above the cold grassy knoll. He claims to have been there. Both of them did. Wallace and Dugan both admitted to that. And what's his name? Richard Kane told me that he was where Wallace said he was, not the Caltex building. Yeah. So that's, there was some verification for me. Now, for anybody else, you either got to take it my word or not. Like your partner there said, it's too bad that it can't be proven.
Yeah, I know.
I think a lot of them have proven if somebody wants to go to the trouble. But
I find it interesting, the other guy, Roger Craig, I just realized today when you were talking about him who he was, because I was watching a video of him. He was from the sheriff's office. He kept changing his story over the years. He kept adding information over the years, and then I guess he committed suicide, supposedly, when he was 39.
Yeah, that's quite possible. Well, a lot of cops do that anyway.
They don't know if it was real suicide or not, but, he kept changing his story and adding stuff. And
it's always questionable, isn't it? I wonder what mine will read like.
You can go on record saying that you're not going to commit suicide.
No, I'm not going to commit suicide, and we'll put that right in words right now.
I'm glad to hear it.
I'm very much alive and going to live as long as I'm wet will.
Very good.
Yeah. Only the good die young.
Yeah. Well, I'm okay then, as you know.
All right.
The Drake boys are all that way.
The Drake boys,
yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you. It's been really nice hearing your story in person.
Keep up the emails.
Thanks, Joan.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Jess Joan Dark of Paranoia Magazine.
And well, I've got a lot of detractors, evidently, from what I'm told. Like I say, I don't care one way or the other, but, you know, I expected that when I brought this thing out, when Jan Gregor told me, he said, you know, there's people going to your story every way that they can. So fine, let them go.
Yeah.
I'm just going to tell it the way I tell it. I'm not going to change it.
Well, I think it would make a great movie, Mr. McKenzie. I think it would really move people. Even if it doesn't, it jives with so much of the data out there. Have you read many JFK assassination books?
Not really. I sort of steer away from them because I read that one Appointment in Dallas, and it sort of, I knew who the guy was that he had the picture in there of.
He's called Saul in that book.
Yeah, he calls him Saul, yeah. And he was at my safe house in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew about him, and it sort of poisoned me by reading that. And then I read a couple others, but not much, because I don't care to poison myself. I know what I know, and what I saw and what I heard. And that's, I don't want to, you know, every time you read something else, you sort of get a different slant on things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to keep my original slant. And it's just, you know, as I say, it's for me more than it is for anybody else, unless somebody wants to use it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to give it to somebody, or they can give me a little money if they want. You know.
Rod, we have another caller. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Al Hedel in Providence, Rhode Island. And, Rod, my question to you is, based on your knowledge of the Sicilian Mafia, do you think that the Mafia today still has the capability to assassinate a president? And if not, do you know of other organized crime groups that have kind of going ahead of the Mafia, the Italian Mafia?
I will put my neck in the noose on that one. Just go downtown where you're at and talk to Richard Raymond Patriarca, young Raymond, and he could tell you very well what he can do.
Do you believe in, the story goes that in the 80s, starting in the 80s, the feds really broke up the Italian Mafia.
Didn't break it up as much as it went legitimate. Have more legitimate businesses than they do the crooked businesses. You know, it's just it was a matter of economics with them. They broke themselves up to a great extent. But if they want to do something, they do it.
And
Sicilians are okay, but the like I said to you, Joe and one or the other. I said that the Corsicans are the ones that you don't want to mess with.
Yeah.
They're the bad boys internationally today. Yeah. All your Russians. Your Russians aren't exactly patsies.
All right. Stay tuned for the final segment of PSYOP Radio Live from American Freedom Radio. We'll be right back. Everybody, this is the last segment of this evening's live PSYOP radio show. Our guest is Roderick A. McKenzie. And Rod, we have another new caller on the line. Just enough time for one more phone call. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Sure. Hello.
Hey, Matt, hi, Smiles.
Hello there.
What did you say?
Good. How are you guys tonight?
We're doing good. How are you?
Good. Mr. McKenzie, I want to just say it is so blessed of you to come out now and claim some atonement and some humility and do the right thing after those years that you said you're not proud of. I myself have done some things in my life that I'm not proud of. But when we come out and try to make right, it really is honorable. So I very much take my hat off to you.
Well, that's good for me to get the PTSD out of me.
Both. And I have a question, guys. It's pretty hard to imagine a two-hour discussion of the assassination of John F. Kennedy without hearing the word George Herbert Walker Bush. And I'm wondering, as a resident of Chicago, who is an announced candidate for the United States Senate here for the people of Illinois, I'd like to know if the words Annenberg or Pritzker or Capone or any other names that are family names that are pretty famous here in Chicago ever came up in any of the things that you heard about the Kennedy assassination.
The only thing I ever heard was that Tony Accardo had given some orders for the safe house that I had, and Murray Humphreys was involved in signing me off to have that safe house. That's all I understood that, with Sam Giacana. That's the only people, as far as politicians go, only Dick Kane, who was worked for the Sheriff's Department later on, or before that, I don't know which. He was the only one that I knew that was politically aspiring. Of course, everybody was into politics. But,
another idea, Mr. McKenzie, is that many, many tens of thousands of people and hundreds of thousands of people have your back, because make it look like an accident. Those kinds of suicides are getting harder and harder for them to pull off. I also am never going to commit suicide, and it really is beautiful that all the truthers out there are, with the help of American Freedom Radio and these amazing men that you're on the phone with today, Miles, Miles and Mac.
I thank you anyway. But if they want me, they'll get me. They would have done it long ago if they'd wanted me.
Good deeds are done in the light. Hey, here's one more question. There's a book that's come out pretty recently. Well, there's a documentary by Alice Jones, which is called The Bush Family Connection to the JFK Assassination. And it's pretty well known that that the FBI Director Hoover issued a memorandum or a letter on either the 22nd of November or the 23rd of November in which he referenced George Bush from the CIA. Did the name George Bush ever come up?
Clytellison and Hoover were around Dallas at that time. I saw Hoover. And, they were there. I don't think they were there when it happened, but they were in and out. They were at that party where evidently there was a party given at some... one of the mansions.
Clint Murchison's house, right?
Right, Murchison's house,
yeah.
Right. And, of course, I wasn't there, but I heard all about it. And there's quite a bit to be told there if anybody ever comes up with it. But they find, I understand.
Where can we buy your, Mr. McKenzie, where can we send $24 or $30? Where can we buy your book and put that up on our social media website?
You send me who you are, and I want to know who you are. I'll give you a copy.
Absolutely. My name is Jeffrey Joseph Black, and I live in Chicago. And I'm one final question, guys. If we can just find one candidate for office in each of the 50 states that would be a spark, you've got one here in Illinois. You've got, I'm running for the seat that's held by Dick Durbin, who is, very closely linked to this Gary Sotoro, the Annenberg Foundation here in Chicago, the Pritzkers. If we can just, are you guys aware of any single announced candidate for office in any of the 50 states that will talk about the Kennedy assassination in the sense that Oswald obviously was set up and didn't act alone?
No, they're not going to talk about it. That's
but they have to. We're going to lose our country. We're going to have martial law. We're going to have a new world order if they don't come out.
I hope, I don't care one way or the other, but that's, it's not going to come out for another 50 years.
Wow.
If the records ever do come out, and I suppose they've been tampered with too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, thank you, caller, and thank you for all the kind words, and for our guest and for ourselves. And drop us a line at smiles@psyopradio.com or Mac White.
Mac at MacWhite.com.
And And here we are in the final segment here, Mr. McKenzie. Is there a way, do you want to give out any public way of contacting you, or should people just come to
that address if you want my Seattle address, the 49th Street address if you want. That you can give that one out if you'd like. And
yeah, we've got that address right here. That's the 49th Street address?
Right.
That's 819 North 49th Street, mailbox number 209,
right.
Seattle, Washington, right. 98103-6517. If you want to contact.
Right. Anybody wants to write to me, they can write to me there.
Very good.
Well, Mr. McKenzie,
well, I'm sorry if this I've been incoherent or anything.
Not at all. It has been a fascinating evening, and thank you so much for sharing this story.
I thank you for the opportunity to share it. You know, it's all, the story's out there. If anybody wants it, they can contact me.
I absolutely recommend that they do.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Have a good night.
You have a wonderful night.
You too.
You too.
Good night.
All right.
Okay. We're done.
Yeah, they'll meet you down there. All right, well, this has been another live edition of PSYOP Radio. Our guest tonight has been Roderick McKenzie. And next week's guest will be Supreme Commander Jim Mosley, the editor of Saucer Smear, talking about his experiences in the history of UFO phenomena. And you can find out more about the Summer Flying Saucer Cinema Series over at anomalyarchives.org. And, of course, there'll be archives of this show at psyopradio.com later this evening.
Yes. Well, thanks for joining us on this very interesting show tonight. And we'll see you again this time next week.
Take care. Good night.
Good night.